Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose.
Cutting down to the truth through history and experience. The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bone's Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge. Email kfr@scalpeledge.com or the website scalpeledge.com.
The next episode of The Scalpel starts now.
Welcome to The Scalpel. This is Dr. Keith Rose. We have back on the show today a dear friend of mine, retired Marine Major Timothy Lynch. Now, not many people know the name Timothy Lynch, but a lot of people know the name Baba T, because Baba T and I spent the better part of a decade in Afghanistan, driving around doing projects and supporting the cause to help rebuild that country. Baba T is on the All Marine Radio, and I heard the show they did the other day, and it was an outstanding show, and so I'm really glad he's back today. So welcome, Baba. Well, we're in a very fluid situation right now in Afghanistan. I know everyone's seen the TV reports, the news reports. We both know the reports of how the Afghans, or the Taliban, in some district areas are pulling people out and executing them. But in the cities, they seem a little more restrained. And I was listening to the show the other day, Tim, that you were on. And why don't you tell us about what's going on in Jalalabad? Because I think there's an interesting comparison or an interesting illustration of what's happening.
I will try to set this up quickly because it's kind of confusing. But the coolest story you've ever heard. So everybody is familiar with the amount of money we spent trying to build infrastructure up in Afghanistan and all the problems that came with fraud, et cetera, et cetera. What people don't know is the most effective NGO in Afghanistan was a Golden Triangle La Jolla Rotary Club from San Diego, because San Diego is a sister city of Jalalabad. And that was because of the work of a Department of Defense contract scientist named Dave Warner, dual PhD MD. And they came into the Taj when I gained control of that guest house, and everything was run out of the Taj. The Rotarians were aggressive. They built dormitories, they built schools, they built a professional learning center for academic students, graduate students and whatnot. They built all this infrastructure, and 2 days ago, the Taliban came to inspect Nangarhar University, where this work occurred. The staff lined up to greet them, and two of the staff shaved that morning. That is an act of defiance that is a level of bravery that is about 15 times higher than anything I've seen from any of our leadership ever. I mean, that is a direct slap in their face. And the Taliban, much to their credit, not only ignored this, didn't say a word about it, they said they're going to award certificates of appreciation from the emirate for the work that they've done educating Afghans teachers. And oh, by the way, your Americans can come back, but they just can't drink beer all the time. We don't tolerate that, but they're welcome to come back too. How's that for some news that you'd never expect to hear?
No, you didn't. And I think that's part of the overall charm offensive they're currently doing right now. I will point out, though, that while the Taliban's saying we're going to be a kinder, gentler Taliban, we're going to support women's rights, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, you can look back in history at Stalin, at Mao, and in their ascendancy to power, once they took over, they all said almost the exact same thing. But as history has shown us, they never followed through.
And this is tricky, because what they're saying and what they're doing is, this time we're here for the people. This time it's all about the people. We're doing everything we can to show the Afghan people that we're here and we're serious about the people. And that's exactly what first things Mao said, exactly the first thing Stalin said. Everything, we're getting this collective power together to aid the people and help the people. And once, you know, that's a rather consistent trend line. I'm not saying that's what the Taliban are doing here. Let's hope not. But it's alarming if you know history and have a good idea about the cultural predispositions of your average Central Asian tribesman.
Well, that's true. And also, the four female pilots that we trained in the Afghan Air Force, by reports, and I've seen pictures, one was stoned, and the other three were killed on the roof of the palace. So they're... No, I'm not surprised, but what I'm saying is the kinder, gentler Taliban, I believe, is most likely a propaganda stunt and not reality. But currently, let's pivot a little bit to Kabul, because right now we have a serious situation in the capital of Afghanistan. And for everyone that's been contacting me, and I appreciate your emails and your calls and your texts, getting planes into the airport is not the issue. Getting people processed and into the airport is where the firewall is right now. I mean, there's no way to move people because you have Taliban standing outside certain gates in the airport. And a lot of people are getting beat, hit with sticks on their legs, and sent packing. So the challenge we have right now is to get the most critical assets that we had, guys that helped the coalition forces out. I saw a video the other day, and I'm not going to post it. It's gruesome. Of a gentleman that was a police officer, worked in their intelligence division in Badges. And you know Badges, Tim, I got a picture of you there. And he was taken out and summarily executed. And they told him, well, he fought against the Taliban. Well, any policeman or ANA soldier, that was their job. That's what they were paid for. And so when you have these type of executions, these summary executions, you have to really understand that it's not quite as stable as our betters are thinking, but it is stable enough to get people out if we do the heavy lifting. And right now, we're not going out into the city and bringing in the people that need to get to the airport. We're not, but my understanding are the Brits are doing a pretty good job of this. What's your take?
Well, I've got four families that have been stuck outside that gate for 3 days now, and this is after traveling from Zaranja in Jalalabad, and I'm a little bit it's hard not to get emotionally involved because these are people that helped us, and I'm sorry. At any rate,
no, it's okay. There is. I get it, brother. Hey, man, these people. These people helped us.
These people helped us for a long time.
Well, there has now developed within the social media circle of people that we know and used to operate with several entities that are sending SOF Terps out and bringing people in specifically. I mean, it's come to that. You have all kinds of organizations of American veterans who are doing what I've been doing. And I mean, I've got a pile of visas here, and they're getting through. Some of my guys are getting notified, but they can't get through the gate. And I'm just heartsick at the debacle, and more than a little bit upset that A, the Brits are able to go out and get their people and we can't, WTF, and B, the Army put the 10th Mountain to reinforce the embassy, and the Marines ought to be there. But that's the kind of chicken baloney that Marines would get all upset about, you know, because we're idiots. But this situation outside the airport, it's not, like you said, it's not throughput of aviation assets, which you would think was limiting it. It's screening people. There's at least three general officers on the ground there. And when you've got that many stars on the ground, you're breeding confusion. Had they left us in charge of an infantry colonel, those guys that have been outside the gate for 3 days would be in. And one of those women waiting outside the gate has two little kids that are Americans. They were born in California. They speak only English. And after the third time of getting through the gate attempt, she's gone back to her parents' apartment and she's not coming out. She has lost, you know, she's not moving.
She's losing hope. And these children have American passports. They don't speak Pashto or Dari, they're Americans. And you and I both know people that have gone to the gates, showed their American passports, and not been let through because they're, quote, not on the list.
And this is the problem, because they say, talk about these thousands of Americans in the country. Those thousands of Americans don't exactly look like you and me, Keith. Most of them look like they were Afghans. Most of them were born in Afghanistan, but they're Americans now. And
I might add, they are people of color. And they're being turned away.
No, they're original white people.
No.
If you get the sun off them, they turn like, they look like Casper the Ghost up at Nuristan.
Well, they do. Well, I still remember the albino guard that we had that used to always get shot during the riots because they thought he was American.
His leg looked like a cheese grater. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, how does this always happen to you? Weird, man.
I know. But let's not get off the track here for just a second, though. But what I want to do is I want you to hear this clip. It's General Milley. And I think this clip says so much. So I want to listen to this clip from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. And I want you and I to, you know, break it down and parse it and educate the general populace of where we are from the highest levels of our leadership. Cut one.
However, the time frame of a rapid collapse that was widely estimated and ranged from weeks to months and even years following our departure. There was nothing that I or anyone else saw that indicated a collapse of this army and this government in 11 days. Central Command submitted a variety of plans that were briefed and approved by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the Secretary of Defense, and the President. These plans were coordinated, synchronized, and rehearsed to deal with these various scenarios. One of those contingencies is what we are executing right now. As I said before, there's plenty of time to do AERs and key lessons learned and to delve into these questions with great detail. But right now is not that time. Right now, we have to focus on this mission because we have soldiers at risk. And we also have American citizens and Afghans who supported us for 20 years also at risk. This is personal, and we're going to get them out.
I'm just amazed that General Milley took time away from his, you know, Robin DiAngelo book, learning about white fragility and rage that he told Congress that he needed to study up on, to actually say anything. But then again, Tim, when he talks about AARs, which are after-action reports, and lessons learned, in the past 2 decades, has that been, quote, to quote Joe Biden, a thing?
What's been a thing is the complete and absolute refusal to deal with counterinsurgency warfare, the most common form of warfare of mankind from history, as history will show you. That's what deals for it. And our soldiers, any American who joins the Army or the Marine Corps today is at risk. They're in danger because they are being led by grossly incompetent officers. When he says there was no indication that this was going to happen overnight, that is an admission of incompetence and ineptitude by him. And I know that I am an unreasonable man because I prefer to see my general officers not encased in layers of fat. That offends me. I kind of want them to be fit because that's what they're supposed to do. But when I hear a fat guy sitting here trying to deflect blame and then try to play the victim card with this, it's all personal, you know, I was there and lost people and stuff like that, I become enraged because this complete and sudden collapse was obviously something that the Taliban coordinated with the guys that stayed behind who were not molested, Karzai and Abdullah. And who blames them for being upset with America, given the way that we've treated the both of them? And I know people are kind of, I'm talking from the Afghan perspective, not our perspective, but this was the most comprehensive intelligence failure since the last time I heard somebody talk like that. And what they were saying was, nowhere could we imagine planes being flown into the buildings in New York. Yeah, well, of course you can't imagine that because you're idiots. And you've only had a couple years of traffic from jihadis telling you they're going to do this. And then you have Osama bin Laden come in, tell us his plan that he launched when he launched those airplanes. And now, as the last guy withdraws from Kabul, his plan is mission complete. He has completely on a strategic level, did what he set out to do. We, on a strategic level, have fallen for it and played reaction to his action. We're always behind the curve. And now we've got a gigantic, expensive military that isn't worth a cup of warm spit, but they're diverse. So that's good. And they don't get hard. They don't go hassling transsexuals or anything like that. Oh, no. So that is the acme of success. Sun Tzu says the acme of success for a military is winning a battle without firing a shot. So who's the better military?
Well, I'll tell you what, folks, you just heard an epic Baba T rant. I happen to be on the receiving end of those epic rants for over a decade in country. But he's not wrong. And I'll break it down. I can translate Baba T and break it down simply for you. This was not, it was not a failure of information gathering, of atmospherics and intelligence. It was a failure of the leadership in the intelligence community, not the rank and file. It was a failure of the leadership in the military, not the rank and file, to act on said intelligence, because I could read you from one of the intelligence briefings or the information briefings. Let's just call it information atmospherics, which we or people that provided these reports said Kabul will fall. The Taliban have moved through Afghanistan and have fought their way through several heavily armed districts, collapsing the Afghan national forces, encouraging surrender, and they are moving at a rapid pace to Kabul. Now, granted, he says we had no idea this was coming or it could fall in 11 days. This was in June of this year. And it follows our reporting in May of this year, in April of this year. And we gave a report in July that said Kabul will fall. But General Milley stands up and says, we had no reporting indicating this. Well, I can tell you where this reporting went. It went straight to the Pentagon. Now, maybe he didn't see it because it wasn't wrapped in a taco or wrapped in a chocolate eclair. But someone saw this and either decided it wasn't worth addressing. It wasn't, as Tim and I both know, Baba and I both know, we have passed off reports and we were told, this is a lot of work. I mean, you know, the whole saying, and I can tell you this was on a post-it note in some three-letter leadership conference room, big ops, big problems, little ops, little problems, no ops, no problems. And let me tell you what the other side of that equation is. Big operations, big success. Little operations, little success. No operations, people die. And we are on the downslope of no operations. And we have shown the world that we have been kind enough to not only lose in Afghanistan, to grab defeat from the jaws of victory. But listen to this article, Baba, from the Daily Caller. And I'm going to take umbrage with this title. Taliban seized 40 aircraft, thousands of armored vehicles and guns, DOD officials reportedly say. Actually, that's what the DOD officials said. No, they didn't seize it. They picked it up because it was left there. They didn't seize anything. They basically went on an Easter egg hunt when we abandoned our base.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you can't. It is too bizarre. But let's go back to what you're talking about the intelligence reports, because the way this works is you get an intelligence report from somebody you don't know. It's single source. It's worthless because you don't know that person. You get intelligence reports from a source, and these guys, but all these sources have names, so you know who they are. You know what their legend is. And as these reports turn out to be accurate and more accurate, then that source has greater weight. When one comes in from that source, it's going to be 10 times more weighted than somebody you don't know and has no track record. So now you have intelligence operators who've been on the ground for, let's call it 18 years. I'm going to hazard a guess, right?
Just a couple decades.
Yeah, a couple decades. And these guys...
I don't know who those guys are, though.
Yeah, these guys have consistently been good producers, but there's problems. One, they're not on your payroll, then that means you don't control them. And two, it's the same thing that we experienced when I was doing the irrigation in the city cleaning projects. Nobody at USAID wanted to hear from a bunch of former military guys, Canadians and Americans, that they can do every project they were assigned on time, on budget. They didn't want to hear that. They gave us bigger projects, and we jammed them. I did the entire irrigation in a province in 2 friggin' years. Chris Courtson did the same thing in the East. The USAID hated us because we did exactly what we said we were going to do on time, on budget, and nobody else did that. Nobody else.
If you need to explain to the
hypothetical intelligence agency, faces the exact same hurdle. The hell with those guys. Why do they always know this stuff? That's they will ignore that intelligence out of spite because they don't like the guys doing it because they're outside the wire, outside of their control. And somehow that feels a little bit dangerous to them. And danger to them means there's risk involved in their career arc. That's danger. And right. danger to us was getting shot.
Well, that's true, too. But it also, when they have billion-dollar budgets and are producing whatever open source overseas channels they're watching, or whether whatever they are fed from neighboring country liaison services, and that's the entire report, it's tough to compete with ground truth, which is done for pennies on the dollar when they need their big budgets it's a direct proportion to their genitalia in their atmosphere. But Baba, I want to backtrack just a second here on this military equipment that we were, quote, seized by the Taliban. Billions of dollars worth. And we have a report I talked about yesterday, and we're getting more reports of a lot of this equipment is making its way across the Turkmen border to Pakistan.
Of course it is. It was probably going across the northern border into Tajikistan, too. Of course it is.
And what would that indicate?
Well, that indicates, of course, that our adversaries are getting our latest models of our equipment to reverse engineer. That's going to happen. We do the same thing to them. That's like, duh. That's what we do to each other. The problem comes down to the fact that in America, we have too much damn money. We send people overseas to fight for 6 months at a time, put them in vehicles that cost, $5-6 million a piece, knowing we'll never recover those vehicles. We've got no ability to maintain those vehicles. We've got no place to put them in America. Those things aren't of any use to us, but we'll sit there and pump those out in unlimited numbers, knowing they're not coming back home because we've got the money to do this. Whereas when we were a more serious nation, like in, let's say, the 1930s and 20s, when you sent Marines over to China to guard some kind of a diplomatic a ceasefire, they went to China and they stayed in China. And when they were done a couple of years later, they'd come back. Onesies and twosies would come back that whose enlistments expired if they weren't extended. The sick, lame and lazy, they would get back and forth in medevacs, but those were on ships. Those took months. My mother was born in China because of this, my grandfather being a Navy physician. So we've got too much money and we've got the best equipment in the world. And I have spent personally thousands of dollars to have a nice set of guns, and I could walk into Kabul right now and pick up the nicest weapon systems in the world, probably for $20. That's irritating to me personally.
Well, yeah, and the unfortunate thing is we are now trying to evacuate our personnel, and the threat is not only the Taliban, but the Taliban armed with our latest weapons. And then that's the big story here is that we did not.
They can't set the headspace and timing on a 50 cal. They'll screw it all up. Wait and see.
Well, they will, but you and I know that, having been shot at by Duskas 400 meters quite often. But let's get back to this. You know, we have the chairman of the Joint Chiefs coming out and basically spitting out pablum. And as American citizens, we have to wake up to the fact that we are being led by the highest level of incompetence. In fact, there was a memo sent out in the agency, I understand, through anonymous sources. And what this guy told me is they're no longer going to do age waivers at the agency, because there's a lot of older folks that are just sitting around in cubicles, and they have their benefits, they have their money, they're really not producing anything, and they keep getting age waivers. And the guy described it as the best of the desperate. He said, we have the best of the desperate still here. People holding on to their jobs but produce nothing. And I think right now in our leadership in the military, I guess we have the best of the desperate. Those that, you know, General Milley and General Austin were both 06's colonels, passed over for promotion twice. And what does that mean in military terms, Tim?
Well, that generally would indicate two things. One is that they're not very good, and there's a reason for that. Two is they lacked the luck. They didn't have a godfather on the board. Unfortunately, I got to be defensive here. My dad was P2'd as a colonel and made general. So it's not everybody that makes general that way.
Well, your dad was a solid warfighter. That's the difference.
Oh, yeah. That was why he made general, because he had so much field time. That was also what made him get passed over twice, because back in the 80s, there were not that many Marines with that much command time in the FMF.
Oh, and the other thing is, so everyone understands, dear, in the hierarchy of the military, in the bureaucracy, you have your chairborne Rangers and you actually have your airborne Rangers. And the guys that are downrange cutting their teeth in actual combat, actual operations, they come back and they have these things on their chest called medals. They're big Christmas trees. And the guys that have been sitting back in CENTCOM and the guys that have been sitting back in CONUS, the continental United States, they don't like to be reminded of their lack of ambition in the field. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's a very fair statement. And, you know, in reference to our the four stars you're talking about, I just was thinking that through. Generally, a guy that P2'd at the colonel level was promoted because of tactical proficiency and tactical prowess, and he'll be sent to fix tactical formations and never make it past two stars. Why is he not going to make it past two stars? Because Congress has to approve three-star appointments, and they're generally not going to approve a general officer who is P2'd at a colonel as a colonel. So there's the curiosity with those two knuckleheads, because they clearly weren't retained by their tactical acumen. They were retained for other purposes, and I'm not sure what those purposes are, but I think we can figure it out.
Rumor has it on their PARs, or one of them on his PARs, was frequently referred to as cement head. So I'm thinking he probably wasn't thought highly of by his the people filling out his evaluations.
No, probably not. And you can listen to Secretary of Defense Austin and then go back and listen to Jim Mattis and compare and contrast the two as far as their ability to message. And remember, when these press conferences are messaging, and you want to know who are there messaging, you know what I mean? Now, you could figure it out pretty easy with Chaos, their General Mattis, because he was so damn articulate and knowledgeable. That's not how you would describe Secretary Austin. You might actually describe him as being particularly inarticulate and particularly limited in vocabulary. And then you start surmising why that would be, and you're in a territory you don't want to go into. So it's disgusting.
Are you racist, Tim? Are you racist, Bob?
Well, that's not that. I'm not going to touch that because that sounds like a racist statement.
Definite preference for Americans and people who want to be American and having, I don't know, having spent years and years bringing nothing but minimal comfort to Afghans in my humanitarian, heavily armed humanitarian role. I think I can avoid accusations of racism by demonstrating.
Well, and we both are super fans of Colonel West.
Oh, yeah. All right. When I should tell you about the first day I met him down in Kandahar. It was friggin' hysterical, but I don't want to use up our limited time.
No, that's okay. We're talking about Colonel Allen West, and both Timmy and I have, we know Colonel West. We think a lot of this great man and patriot, and he's very articulate. If you read his newsletter, and I do, he is straight to the point of the problems that we face in this country. But Bob, I appreciate you joining me today. I appreciate you kind of helping me explain to the public, and we have a really cool audience. It's grown exponentially. What is going on in Afghanistan? Kind of a behind-the-scenes look. And to to do a what my buddy would call a Ranger reback. We have a situation now that is a crisis slash chaos situation that didn't have to be. Now, we can accept that, but the most important thing now is to establish a good perimeter and cordon outside the airport, a processing station where we can get the people that are in extremists out of the country, and we need to ensure that we leave no man behind, unlike what SecDef Austin said, where we're going to get them out till we can't anymore because we don't have capacity. Let me just explain to you something. We have capacity. Does our leadership have the will? Are they willing to do what it takes to leave no man behind? Because, buddy, when you and I traveled, even with our Afghans, what was the rule wherever we went?
Well, that's what separated us from the other guys. According to the Panjshiris, is our rule was if we're fighting, we all fight. Nobody goes, I'm the last guy out, I being the leader of the team. And we drilled that. We went and rehearsed that. And after we did that, the Panjshiris were our friends for life. They would say repeatedly, I thought you guys were supposed to run. We're like, we don't run from nobody, dude. What are you talking about?
I remember one trip down to Kandahar. We had gone through several contacts, and on the road we had a vehicle that went down, and we didn't continue on. We circled back. Everyone took up position till we could get that vehicle. They knew. Yeah, I know it was not a good place to hang out.
Place to be, man. That was ground zero Taliban in 2007.
Yeah, and I heard a rumor that someone might have taken a black can of spray paint and put a smiley face on a Taliban flag in the middle of a field that said, have a nice day. I don't know that that's true, but I heard a rumor. But anyway, that's for another time.
But pulling in, if you remember, we got that tire changed by it looked like a NASCAR pit crew consisting of a 7-year-old boy and his 11-year-old brother. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
That little 7-year-old is in 100 degrees. He's got a full sweater on, and he's got that gigantic pry bar prying the tire off the rim. And
it would put NASCAR crews to shame. It really would. I know. He was like, he don't want to be out in the open lawn.
Yeah, they changed that thing, and as soon as they slapped it on the car, they ran.
Yeah. Well, listen, buddy, I appreciate you joining me. I know this is total aside, but I'll leave with this. You've been on the edge of this coronavirus, and we'll talk about that sometime again, because you've been on the cutting edge of saying, hey, this isn't what you think it is. It's kind of like that Princess Bride movie. It's not what you think this is.
Yeah, I've got a background in chemical biological warfare, rather extensive one. So, yeah, I was kind of on that one at the initial thing. But sure, brother, look, I'm sorry about the emotions. I've just got another. You remember?
Yes, I do. Let's not use names, though, because people can hear this and we want to get our guys where we need to get them.
I probably messed it up enough that nobody knows what the hell I'm saying in Afghanistan. But he's talking to me on Messenger now. He again can't get through with his family. I'm sorry for the emotion. I've been at this for a while.
Hey, brother, keep the face. I had some good news last night. I can't talk about right now, but we're going to get him through. Okay. Hey, bro, I love you. Keep the faith. Well, everyone listen to this, because this is a hard man you're hearing break up, because he cares about the people that kept us safe.
I also care about the mission. That was the way we were taught when we were young in the military. That somehow has slipped away.
Well, I would encourage everyone out there, the new mission is to make this country great again, is to keep the Constitution alive, intact, keep freedom. And remember, this is a generational challenge. It's not a one-off. Well, listen, buddy, I appreciate you hanging out with me today.
One side down to are my fellow Texans. Listen, there's families are going to be coming. And if you get a family from the North or an Uzbek family, do not let them play cricket. Put those boys into football, and you'll have some defensive backs that will their ferocity will absolutely stun you. Just don't let them play cricket. That ruins them.
Yep. I remember that at the Taj. Well, listen, appreciate you hanging out with me today, brother. And good luck on All Marine Radio. I know you're going to be on there in less than 30. So for everyone listening, this is Baba T and myself. We appreciate you hanging out with us today. Go have a great weekend. Be blessed. Pray for the folks on the ground in Afghanistan. The flag officers on the ground there are doing a good job with what they have. I've been very impressed with the comms we've had with them. So encourage them. Encourage our leaders to do the right thing, to pay attention. And most importantly, we have to keep freedom rolling.
Head high, protest line. Freedom scribbled on your sign. Headline, New York Times. Standing on the edge of a revolution. Hey, hey, just obey. Your secret's safe with the NSA. And God we trust, or the CIA. Standing on the edge of a revolution.
Scalpel with Dr. Keith Rose.
The Scalpel is proudly sponsored by Z-Bones Bone Conducting Headphones. Learn more at zbones.io. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to The Scalpel wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at The Scalpel Podcast, on Twitter at The Scalpel Edge, email kfr@scalpeledge.com, or the website scalpeledge.com.